You're listening to the Sound Girls podcast with Susan and Becky from Central Florida.
This episode features an interview with Dave Ratt from Ratt Sound. You can find us at social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, soundgirls.org, and the website soundgirls.org. So Dave Ratt is the founder and president of Ratt Sound Systems in California and has over 40 years of experience in the live sound market. He has provided sound reinforcement and been a front of house engineer for some really amazing bands like Rage Against the Machine, Soundgarden, Blink-182, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Pearl Jam, and Coachella, and a bunch of other things. You have, Dave, such a long bio that I don't want to read the entire thing. But I did want, for anybody who is listening, who is new to the industry, especially if any of my students are listening, just to give an idea of who you are. Dave has been working in live sound for longer than I've been alive. And he's been featured in magazines like Live Sound, Front of House, and was voted Live Sound Person of the Year several years back by Pro Sound News, and has won a Parnelli Award for Front of House Mixer of the Year. You are a panelist at trade shows like Pro Production, NAMM, AES, and of course you contribute to magazines and websites like Pro Sound Web. And then, of course, one of the ones that I saw recently that you did are some YouTube internet challenges, like how quickly can you wrap an XLR? Mm-hmm. I definitely challenged my students to that one. Welcome. And we are so happy to have you on our podcast.
Awesome.
Welcome, Dave. So great to meet you. And excited to talk to you. How are you?
I'm doing great. And it's great to meet you and exciting to be here. I've been Sound Girls to see where Sound Girls is now and to know the organization from when it very first started, and talking to Carrie about, she's talking about the idea. I mean, I get goosebumps just thinking about how amazing it is, and it's grown, and what's, you know, something that's dear to my heart and been following all the way through. I can't tell you how honored I am to be able to be here and, yeah, see this and be a part of it.
We feel mutually honored. I've been watching your YouTube videos since, gosh, back in maybe 2006, I started watching them, like when they first came out. And, you know, I mean, I don't know how long YouTube has been around, but I feel like you were at the ground floor of training on YouTube videos.
I don't know. There wasn't a lot on sound when I first started doing it. And I tried to do videos on stuff that other people weren't doing. So I'd think of an idea and I'd look around, not find anything on it, and try and post the missing bits.
I geeked out totally on your headphone one. He did like a series of headphone one. Right. How many headphones did you test? Dozens, thousands, right?
I don't know, but it was super fun because the Mighty Headphone Quest, I was like, I am going to find the best headphones. So I called all the manufacturers and they sent me stuff. And it kind of felt a little weird though, because I really am unbiased. And some manufacturers said, sent me a whole bunch. They were really great, but all their headphones sounded bad. So then they wanted them all back, of course. But I felt I wasn't. I kind of didn't do that in the future because I didn't want to like get free stuff, not free stuff, borrow stuff from someone and then give it a bad review per se. I'm okay buying it and giving it a bad review.
Right. So some of the listeners, like Susan was saying a minute ago, like she has students and this whole next generation, other than us passing your information on to them. And I do often, you know, like go watch Dave Ratt and geek out on his YouTube channel, because you will, you know. How can people find you? Just Google Dave Ratt?
Yeah. I'm pretty findable. The YouTube, you know, I read every YouTube comment that gets posted. And I also, sometimes I'll get behind, but I mean, recently I've been really good about it. In Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, I'm pretty good about reading everything and responding, either giving a like or a thumbs up, or if there's a question that I really prefer like social mediums versus direct emails,
right?
Especially for questions, because the answer then gets exposed to a lot of people rather than just one person getting the answer, and it allows some open format to it. And all my Facebook, nothing's locked down. My Facebook's open to everyone. I think I'm maxed on friends, but that doesn't mean I don't know how to do that switch over thing where you're supposed to switch to the other kind. I don't even want to bother. I'm just, Twitter. I try and be really open in all formats. So I'm pretty findable. Or you can just call Rat, and if I'm here, I pick up the phone and talk to people if they have something for me.
So what are you at Rat Sound working on? You're probably building something or...
right now more into business damage control.
Sure, after all the COVID stuff, right?
Yeah, it's not the optimum time to be in the entertainment industry. It's okay to be in the entertainment industry as long as you want to not do any shows.
Yeah, my video production is really coming in handy right now.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So, but it's all right. We just do new things. It's a great time. I'm getting caught up on YouTube videos and working on sound tools stuff. Got some new products there, working on designs. And
anything you can talk about new or that you want to talk about new products?
Some I really want to talk about, but being that there's companies out there that are kind of tracking what we're doing and
right.
And following in our footsteps there, which is a great honor. I don't want to give them a lead.
Sure.
but we got some new cat products coming out. I'm working on a new cable, a new Ether Cat 5 cable that's good for audio, analog audio, and really good for data as well. So kind of merging those even further.
Nice. Love my sound tools stuff that I have. I've got I bought the Sniffer and I was like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. It literally travels in my car with me everywhere I go.
That's awesome.
and I recommend Sniffers. It.
We got the NL4 came out. We've got an NL8 coming out soon.
Sweet.
And we're doing a rebuild on the DMX. Those are done. We're just waiting for them. The company, we get those made in Mexico, and they're not allowed to work on our stuff right now. They gotta stick with the medical stuff. So,
gotcha.
I got a bunch. Oh, I got some really, really cool sound tools products coming out that are a whole nother level.
I'm super excited.
And when we get them, I'll do something with Carrie. I'll reach out to you, Carrie and Sound Girls, and we'll get some stuff out to y'all.
That's awesome. Thank you so much. And speaking of like just how you support us and that you've been here as a supporter and of Sound Girls since we started, I kind of wanted to pivot the conversation and talk a little bit about that as someone who owns, Rat Sound and Sound Tools and has been in the industry for over 40 years. And you've seen our industry come from, probably mostly males that do this for a living into, you were probably one of the first that I can think of production companies that hired females like right off the bat, Carrie and Daniela and a few others that you have that work with you and have always looked at us as a team of people and a sound human. How do you think as an industry veteran, we can become more inclusive and diversified in our production companies?
That's a great question. Early on, there weren't a lot of females. I wouldn't say we were the first. I mean, there was definitely companies with female that were more open to gender equality. The U.S. is kind of, I would say certain countries are worse than others.
Right.
Japan is great. Japan is awesome. I mean, you go to Japan, it doesn't matter. You got girls and guys working hand in hand. It doesn't matter what the position is. You go into head of recording for the equivalent of like a Saturday Night Live show there, and the head engineers, a woman that's just rocking it up. It doesn't miss a beat.
That's awesome.
I'm trying to think about Sweden. There are definitely some European nations that had a lot more openness.
I get a lot of my students from South Korea, which is really cool. I have a lot of students from there.
Definitely, yes. Korea, the Asian nations in general seem to just, hey, if you want to work, it's all good. Everybody can kind of get in the mix there. Mm-hmm. Early on in the rock, it was, and also genres of music as well. When you're doing more theatrical stuff, the worst was heavy metal. Heavy metal was heavy metal and rock.
Not surprised.
Punk rock. Yeah, which it kind of fits the genre. Yeah, there's no surprises there. punk rock was kind of cool because punk rock in itself and its initial creation or its initial inspiration was an all welcoming of the outcasts of every aspect. It was a mishmash.
Yeah.
And so women working and then since we kind of came out of the punk rock industry, that side of it was fine. It's when we did the rock and metal stuff that there was backlash. I remember Carrie just getting people just not accepting that she could possibly know what she's doing. And she knew more than they could possibly dream of or trying to. It was great. It'd be like, can I help you lift that? Don't help her on the ramp. And they were incapable of doing what she could do. And cable. She had it wired. It was so good. So many smiles.
Do you feel like that's the case? We've talked to a few people now that everybody's like, oh, the women tend to just work harder. And if you have a woman on your team, like the guys tend to work harder. Like I've heard a lot of people saying that kind of thing as well. Or have you just seen it like we're all the same people, right? I can lift a case. So can you.
I think that there's two sides to that, or many sides to that, many facets to that. On one side of it, women do, in order, because of the push against and the preconceived perceptions that people have, I think any race and gender, anybody that's outside of the most common race and gender expectations has to work harder and do better and will be more criticized for less errors than others. And that's just, that just exists. In addition to that, when we put our crews together, years ago, we started putting our crews together more like Ocean's 11, Ocean's 9, I don't know. You put it together like a bank robbery.
Right.
Where maybe you have somebody that went to school, another person that learned hands-on through just doing it. And mixed in with that, one of them's muscle, and one of them's a charmer. And one of them's a tech nerd, and one of them's into detail and structure and organization. So if you put a crew together with those four assets or four similar assets, however they're chopped up, you're going to have a lot less conflict between the, and then, adding into that gender or race or whatever, just a mixture of perspectives and life experience. You're going to have less friction and more camaraderie because you have complementary skill sets and perspectives in life versus getting a bunch of Swiss Army knives that all do the same thing, not that well. So I think that, kind of looking at it in the broader perspective, gender is an aspect of that, but one of many aspects of just having this beautiful mix.
Yeah.
I love that analogy.
I do too. And having the sound human do it, and whoever is the best at what they're doing on your crew, not looking at the gender or the
exactly. You're looking at the skill set, best tools for the job, complementary skill sets. And I think that's why those bank robbery movies are so kind of fascinating. We see that over and over again.
Like this person does this one thing and they're the best in the one little thing, and they can only do that, but they do it the best. Yeah.
And we have that refined skill set. You know, you got the acrobat, you've got the lock picker, you got the explosives technician, you've got the truck driver, you got the munitions guy or gal. It's just all of these. And I think that if you want to go deeper into that rabbit hole, when we start out in this business or any business, a band plays on stage, you know, maybe you have one tech, they run out and set up all the monitors, or if there is monitors, set up the main PA, a couple speakers and a stick, mix the PA, mix the monitors from front of house, and maybe turn the lights on. So you got one person. Then as the band grows, every one of those tasks grows into a separate person: monitor engineer, house engineer, lighting person, stage manager. And then as it gets bigger to the largest levels, each one of those things grows into an entire department, an entire sub vendor, an entire business dedicated to nothing but providing crews or providing monitor systems or front of house. And that refinement of, to me, that's just fascinating to see those grow. The Swiss Army knives, each little tool comes out and becomes a complete set.
I love that too. That's one of my favorite things about working on crews and being able to get to do what we do, is seeing each other's strengths and weaknesses and personalities and becoming like a family and a team, more so than an individual even, you know. I enjoy that team atmosphere and working with everybody and finding out, you know, while we're on the road, hey, so this is not my strong suit, but it's yours, obviously. Like, maybe I can help you in an area, you know, and vice versa. And I love that. That's one of my favorite things about what we do, you know.
Yeah. I feel like sometimes that gets hard, Becky, because you're expected to be awesome at everything sometimes. And that's like such a toxic idea and work environment. But I know a lot of places I've been, they want you to be good at everything. And if you admit your weakness, or you admit that, like, that's not my strong suit, then people look down on it. And so there's a struggle there, I think. You know what I mean? When you can't exactly find a happy, cohesive work environment.
Yeah, it's tough to... Yeah, I mean, you definitely want, yeah, there is a counter to that too, where you definitely want to have at least some knowledge of everything, you know, knowing everything. I know how to be an electrician. I know enough about electrician to wire something legally. Now, I'm not a great electrician, but I know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And I know how to load a truck, but there's people who do it better than I do. And there's people that can do everything. Having that broad scope of knowledge and then a highlight and constantly learning all of those things and refining them. The expectation of being the best, the expectation of being pretty darn good at everything and really good at something, I think.
Otherwise, where do you learn? Where do you learn your new stuff? Because you are a teacher, you are the one who shares information. So where do you research and find new things?
I think I'm really, I think one of the things that I find has been beneficial or positive for me is just being observant and trying to solve problems, not taking things for granted or challenging things like, why is it done this way? Is this the best way? Question everything. And then I'll think about a problem for a week, a day, a month, or a year, or 3 years later, go, I got this. I figured it out. Things like sound checks. Like, why is there a desire to check, to hit a kick drum and listen to it and tune it all up and then mute that and then put on the snare and then do that and go through these one at a time? Because at no point during the show are you going to have that mic open and all the other mics muted? And every mic hears everything always. So therefore, there's four scenarios. You have kick mic on, only kick played. You have kick mic on all one or more other instruments, a whole drum set being played, but just the kick mic is on. So you've got all these other mics bleeding in. Or you have another scenario where the kick mic is on and everything's being played but the kick drum. So you're only listening to all the bleed of stuff coming in. And then you have kick mic, I don't know, there's another one in there, kick mic off and everything else being played, or kick mic on and every other mic on, all the other mics on. Oh, that's it. The kick mic, the kick being played and all the mics on. So now you're listening to the kick drum bleeding into everything else. Right. Well, those are all useful scenarios. If there's a kick drum solo and all your mics are on, that's a useful thing to have all the mics on. Check EQing that way, or having the whole band play, but only soloing the kick with all the music. That's another useful scenario. The one thing that's not useful is to have the kick mic on and every other mic muted and only hitting the kick drum. That's the least useful thing we can possibly do. So we have this extremely valuable chunk of time to sound check. Why would we waste it on doing something that's never going to occur? And, you know, looking at how, okay, then how can I refine that sound check scenario? How can we utilize that time? What is the purpose of a sound check? To get the band comfortable on stage and have it sound good. You know, so just getting into this hyper analysis maybe is so that's how I learned things.
I was going to say, you did that with Red Hot Chili Peppers, right? They don't sound check.
They don't sound. And with them, it wasn't even, I didn't have anything.
I was going to say, so you just went in live and it was like, what, you have like the first song to mix in the house?
I had the text would play. So then what I would have is a kick drum sound, but I'd have to remember the difference between how the drum tech plays it versus how the drummer play, how Chad would play it. So you have to correlate those. The goal is to have not the first song be your sound check. That's the worst thing, because that's really where all the audience expectation occurs. Yeah. You want that first song to hit as beautifully and impactful as possible. I have a theory for that I learned mixing. We used to do the 60-piece orchestra at noon in a field, in a park up in Calabasas. And they couldn't make noise until noon, and we would set up at 10 a.m., get everything set. We'd set all the mics up. We'd line check all the mics. And then we had to hit 60 pieces first note at noon. So what we'd do is I would turn every single mic on and turn all of the gains up very hot. And as each musician showed up, I'd see peak lights and everything would be muted. I'd see peak lights. I'd say, turn the gain down, put my headphones on, cue it up, dial it in. And once all the peak lights were out, and then I'd unmute it and bring the fader down. And then once all the faders were down, then so I had this process to where when they started, I already had all my gain set and the EQs just by them mucking around. I couldn't watch them. I had to look at the lights. So there's methods of solving these things that, and then they'd hit, it would be pretty darn good. First note, you didn't have to hear the slow ramp up to speed of the show.
Do you train your engineers at Rat Sound to do sound checks or things like that, or is it kind of on a person by person basis and whoever feels comfortable, however?
We don't. I mean, sound, first of all, we don't have a lot of engineers per se. We don't hire engineers per se. We hire technicians.
Got ya.
And I put information out there, and there is information that we like ways to wire and connect stuff and implementation. But as far as the engineering aspect, it's more akin to an art form in a lot of ways. And we're not really telling people how to do art.
Sure.
And a lot of the engineering is, no matter what I say, even what I say is preferred beneficial versus non, there's always an exception to the rule and someone distortion bad, except when it's good.
Right. Right.
Coverage should be even, except if you don't want to cover these areas, in which case it doesn't want to be even. It yeah. should be even all the way throughout. But also, what if you want an area where people can get away and chat? So it's okay. It's
yeah.
So
it's live awareness. Sound, right?
Yeah. So I talk with and share information publicly, and also gets back through. And then if we have issues or we hear or I might come up and just talk to somebody, or they'll ask me questions and I'll offer as desired.
That's awesome. I'm the opposite of you as far as sound checks. I like to listen to each thing individually and then go. But there's times in festivals, there's no way I can do that. Like, mm-hmm. I'm up at the board. I've got 2 minutes. All right, band, play. What do we got? Okay, cool. Everybody off the stage. Next person on. And I'm like, spend my next 2 hours before we go live thinking, okay, what did I hear? How did I go? Where did I, And mm-hmm. then, bam, we're off. And I love the intensity of that. So learning how to mix it, like, in my head before I go live with my ears and fingers, is, to me, like, yeah, that's a challenge. I love that challenge. And I think it's a skill set, to learn how to do that too.
Becky, I've been moving away from sound and doing more video production, and we're just sitting there in video, we're already like, we're done. And I'm just sitting there during sound check, listening to that kick drum hit and hit and hit for like 20 minutes. I'm like, can we move on, please? Are we done now? Why? What are you getting out of this? Like, it works. Move along. And so my patience with that is gone. Like, I do not tolerate 20-minute sound checks for a kick drum only.
I would say that the most important aspect of a sound check, especially if you have the artist involved, is the artist's comfort on stage. For the artists, the musicians, to get on stage and become comfortable with their environment, comfortable with each other, comfortable with the sound and interaction. And everything that we can do as engineers to enhance that comfort level will increase the probability that when they come up for showtime, that they will play cohesively, energetically, and enjoyably. And if they do that, we as engineers will have a great time. It'll be easy, because when they play well, it's easy to mix, or easier. So is the sooner that we can get from, as soon as we get that sound check slot, the sooner we can get that band on stage and rocking out. So the way my check method is, whip through the monitors as quickly as possible. If I'm doing monitors, I'll help the monitor engineer. We'll peck everything through, get it close. When I'm working with a new band, I'll just say, hey, the way I'd like to sound check is this. As soon as we get the stage remotely close, the monitors won't be perfect, the front of house won't be on. As soon as we get close, though, if you guys are up for it, come out and start playing. I don't care. You can rehearse new songs. You can play whatever you want to do, but get up there and start mucking with your gear. And I'd love to have as many songs as you can give me. And if they just start playing, if they start getting in a groove and rehearsing and then giving signs to the monitor engineer's running around, getting them all dialed in. And then out front, I bring the kick up with the whole band playing. I can hear the kick drum, but I can hear how much bass. Okay, I'm getting bass coming into the drum riser, the stands rattling. I can hear the interaction of everything into that kick. And then the snare, and then the hat, rack, floor. Then I bring all the drums up, then I bring them down. They'll kick and snare versus bass, get the bass dialed in. And so I'm just kind of pecking through with two or three songs in. And I've got everything dialed beautifully, and I've got the band up there with 15 to 20 minutes of rock time comforting out.
Right.
And the monitor engineer's dialed, and everything's come together. That seems to be the most direct course between coming into a cold stage and walking away with a decent set of sounds and a band that's happy to be in that position.
And I could listen to you just give tips all day. Like, let me learn from you. Teach me, Obi-Wan. cool. I wish we had like days to just interview and talk to you and ask you questions, but unfortunately we do not. Word of wisdom for all of the newbies and the people coming up, you know, from a veteran like you, do you have something you'd like to share with the next generation?
I'll share it with all I think as a sound engineer, monitor in front of house, monitors, or as a tech, and maybe it applies to other things beyond this business. It does. What we sell to the band, the managers, the people hiring us, the clubs, what we truly sell is confidence. Confidence that when that band walks on stage, something beyond their control, the monitors are hearing or the front of house, the audience is hearing, is going to be as good as it possibly can be in that environment. Doesn't need to be perfect. Nothing's perfect. It doesn't need to be without error. Some have higher expectations. But if you can sell confidence that when you're there, when you personally, when they see your face, that it's going to be good and it's going to run smooth. And to sell confidence, you can't blame other people. You have to be accountable. When you screw up, hey, I screwed up.
Yeah.
And when there's an issue, you can't say, hey, everything's going to suck today. It might not suck. We have some challenges today. We're going to do our best with them. Awareness, you know, depending on the artist you're working with. So I think overall, the point or the tip is to keep that mindset of selling confidence and honesty. We used to have some games and tours, like something went wrong. It was like, what went wrong? Like, that would be me. I did it. and if you work with an artist that's a little irrational, we'd all go, that would be me. And everybody would try and take blame for everything. But that was more playful. Learn everything you can. Just constantly enjoying learning and figuring stuff out is... even if it's outside of your realm of expertise, there's a certain pattern that some people have where they almost show pride in what they don't know, or pride in what they don't eat, or what they won't try, or they, oh, no, I will never eat that. Like, why not? Have you ever tried it? No, I don't want to try it. I said, well, why don't you try it and then decide you don't want it? Well, you know, I don't need to know that. It's not me. I'm not a lighting person. It's like, well, how do lights work anyways? Having that kind of mindset where you get over those mental hurdles and say, you know, how does that lighting board work? Or why is this cable bed? Because you'd be surprised how much stuff we can borrow from other industries and other departments. And also when you might come in handy to help them out so they can come help you out.
That's yeah, so keeping advice. An open mind and being curious and explore.
Curious is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes. And then because if you're curious and you have fun and you enjoy what you do, you naturally will migrate towards being good at it. Mm-hmm. If you're good at something and you're having fun doing it, people will want you around. Who doesn't want someone around that's good at what they do and they're having fun? And if you're around and you're good and you're having fun, well, then they're not almost always, they don't mind giving you some money, paying you to do it, compensating you fairly is the next step in the equation.
Yeah.
And if they don't, move on.
Move on. Next, please.
Next.
Cool. Well, Dave, thank you so much. And, you know, like I said, we could talk to you all day, but we're going to wrap up for today. And, brother, thank you for being a Sound Girl supporter and for being a Sound Human supporter and sharing your knowledge and your curiosity with all of us over all these years. I'm going to keep watching your YouTube channel. I'm at 27 seconds wrapping my cable and I'm going to get better. So.
All right. What was I at? I think you beat me, right?
I think you were 17. I'm working. I'm getting close.
All right. Come on. I love
when
that.
I get there, I'll post it everywhere.
And, yeah. I know we didn't get through a lot of the questions and stuff, but if you ever want to do it again, let me know. I'll gladly do it.
We definitely will.
Thank you so much. And go Sound Girls. Keep this up. It's awesome. Quality, talented people in this industry is awesome, important, and very, very cool.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you so much.
All right. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Sound Girls podcast. You can find out more information on the website, soundgirls.org.